Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Happy Friday. I always like to start out with a happy Friday for you.
Guys. Dr. Ellen's here.
Yeah, she just walked in.
She made the room smell better.
Yeah, well, yeah. It gets warm in here. This is our second podcast for the morning, and so it gets warm in here if we're not careful. Yeah. So
Dr. Ellen just popped in, and now it smells better in the room. So
yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Ellen.
So today's podcast...
Today's what, Friday?
Today is Friday. And this is episode 49. We're getting close to...
We're going
to
do something special for 50.
For 50? We'll have to find a good topic to All do right. for 50. But today's topic, the title of today's podcast is The Price of Attending. I named it The Price of Attending because, for a variety of reasons. We've done some podcasts in the past about ADHD,
right.
And we've talked about that in a variety of ways. But there was some recent research that came out. Published in Nature this week that I wanted to mention real quick. And then we'll spend some time talking about attention, not necessarily ADHD, but attention in general.
You know, I'm glad we're going to talk about attention because I was going to write a book chapter one time, and the title of it was going to be Everything Starts as ADHD.
Right.
In our business, we've been studying ADHD for so many years that we think that, well, everybody knows about this and everybody doesn't know about it.
Right.
If you've never encountered it in your family or your own children, or if you're not a teacher, you really don't know anything about ADHD. And I'm always struck by family members or patients who come in and start talking about it and they know absolutely nothing about
right.
it. And I always forget that most people don't know about ADHD. But I'm glad we're talking about it because it does... everything does look like ADHD when you're 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years old.
Exactly.
But you know, we always have to remind people that these are symptoms that we're seeing, and the symptoms might be ADHD, but it might be something else.
Right.
So it is an exceedingly important topic because it may be ADHD, but it may be something else, and that's really, really important for people to know.
Absolutely. And this is coming at an interesting time, and this article being published in Nature this week comes at an interesting time because this week I've spent many of my mornings recording audio for a course that we're developing, a parenting course that is titled Parenting Your ADHD Child, that we're going to have available for parents through Udemy.
Right.
Hopefully we'll have that soon, with it available within the next couple of weeks.
Well, actually, we have three things. We have the course on ADHD.
Right.
We have a talk that I'm going to do on Wednesday about
next week,
kids
right?
with disruptive. And you're going to do a talk on Thursday about medications
right.
and some of the medications for ADHD. So it is a topic that's very much on our mind because we've been preparing for a couple of weeks for the three talks that we're going to be doing, well, for the course,
right.
ADHD course, and the two talks that we're going to be doing next week.
And the two talks, and don't forget our book coming out.
And the book.
So there's lots of things going on. Now, one frustration is that this study was published today, or actually it was within the last 2 days.
Right.
I just found it today. I recorded the lesson that this would have been applicable to
That's right.
before then. And so
this isn't in the course.
So this, I wasn't able to mention this in the course. And this isn't, it's not human studies. It was studies done with mice, but you know, that's where some of our biggest innovations begin.
That's how we learn about this stuff.
Right.
Is in animal studies because rats become teenagers in 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
Right.
So
right.
they make good subjects.
So I'm going to mention real quick the study just so that we had that basis.
And then, study.
And then we're going to talk about what attention is, because that's where we need to start. So there was within the last couple of days, I think it was March 23rd, there was an article published in Nature that found that a particular gene, they call it the PTCHD1.
Say that again.
PTCHD1. Now, I have no idea what those letters stand for, but somebody does. I'm sure it means something important. That this particular gene was related to attention. And so what they did was they developed these strands of mice that lack that gene. And what they found, basically, is that in this animal model, that those without that gene, without the PTCHD1 gene, could not tune out distractions, which affected their concentration, actually made some of them aggressive, and interestingly affected their sleep, because they were saying that you know, when we try to sleep, one of the things that we need to do is to be able to filter out those distractions and sounds and noises and things like that that would otherwise keep us awake. And then when it interrupts their sleep, they were unable to, and this was a great sort of putting together of all this information that we're going to talk about today. When it affects their sleep, they're not able to take their observations from the days and things that they experienced from the day and consolidate them into memories.
Right.
And so it affected their memory.
And we should maybe talk about that for a minute, because there is this line of research that has now informed us that one of the purposes of sleep is that the memories that you want to make, the stuff that you decide you want to remember, those memories are consolidated during sleep.
Right.
It's one of the purposes of sleep. And the important point here, you mentioned three things. You said that mice who lack this gene,
right,
have trouble tuning out distractions.
Correct.
Have trouble sleeping.
Correct.
And therefore have trouble consolidating new memories.
Right, because of the sleep. But it also made some of them aggressive.
Oh, they become aggressive.
Right.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's this very interesting accumulation of symptoms that seem to be associated in some way with this gene. Now, of course, this isn't a causal relationship or anything like that.
Right.
We're certainly not saying or suggesting that things like ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are caused by the absence of this particular gene, because we know that that's not the case, because research has actually found multiple genes implicated with
it's
ADHD.
It's polygenetic.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think this comes at an interesting time, because while we're talking about treating and managing children with ADHD, one of the things that we try to believe, and I think parents especially work really hard to try to believe, is that, well, if he just worked hard enough, he'd be able to. If he really just tried, he'd be able to focus. You know, he can sit down and he can play video games for hours, but, you know, when he's just got to sit down and do his homework for 30 minutes, he loses concentration and he fights us and he doesn't do it.
Well, I think that's the central issue here. The key issue here is that we've often talked about involuntary deviance, you know, and the assumption, many parents, we always assume that kids can do these things, that they misbehave on purpose,
right,
you know, or that they intend, that there's intent behind their misbehavior. And frequently, and especially with these disorders like ADHD, it's not intentional. These
right.
are things that they cannot help. And at least right now they can't help, but we can teach them how to help it, but it takes a long time, and you have to be very patient, because it is a case of involuntary deviance. And again, to me, a study like this that identifies a gene lends credence, lends support to the idea that there are things that go wrong, you know,
right.
in the brain, in our genetic makeup, in our DNA. There are things that go wrong that make normal activities like paying attention,
mm-hmm.
like remembering what I told you, make those things very, very difficult for some children.
Right.
We have to be patient. That's why when we wrote the handbook,
right.
it's written within that spirit of parents and teachers have to be patient with children, because if children can behave, they will.
Right.
And those who don't probably can't.
Right.
And we have to keep reminding ourselves of that. So this, again, I like studies like this, because they remind us that, yeah, some things can go wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so let's begin this by talking about what attention is to begin with. Attention is a cognitive task. It is a type of energy that affords us the opportunity to tune out some stimuli while focusing and putting forth a lot of, I don't want to use the word attention, but being able to focus on a particular stimulus that we're interested in.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that as a start. It begins with arousal.
Right.
You can't pay attention. We all know you can't pay attention when you're tired.
Right.
Okay. And so the first thing attention is arousal.
Right.
Right. So we know that that's the beginning of attention. That's arousal is something that occurs in the middle of our brains.
Right.
It comes from the deep within the brain. And you can have too little or too much arousal.
Right.
Okay. So if you have too little arousal, creates a problem. If you have too much arousal, it creates a problem. So you need just, it's like the three bears, you know, right. Goldilocks. Mm-hmm. Arousal is like Goldilocks. It has to be just right.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So we have this arousal. We have this internal energy that affords us this opportunity. And it's really, it really takes effort at times to differentiate important from unimportant information.
That's right.
Sometimes, you know, we're in the society that we live in, we're often bombarded by stimuli. There's sounds, there's movements, there's lights, there's all this stuff going on around us all the time. And what our brain is required to do is to sift through all of that.
Filter, right. And that's the second step.
Right.
Start with arousal. Then the next step is filter.
Right.
Because there's so much coming in.
Right.
That you have to filter out what isn't absolutely necessary.
Exactly.
What do you attend to first? Life-threatening stuff.
Right.
You're going to attend to life-threatening before you attend to, oh, I think I'll take a nap or something, you know.
Right.
So, but your brain has that ability to filter. Your brain should have that ability to filter that out. So that's the important step, too, is filter.
Right. And so we take the energy to receive the stimuli, and then we have to have the cognitive abilities to filter through that to figure out what is the important from what is the unimportant, so that we can focus and draw our attention specifically to what we need to focus on.
And that's the third part, focus.
Right.
You know, so now we have, this is all I want to attend. These are the things that I want to attend to. Got rid of everything else that's not important. Now what do I want to focus on?
Right.
What's absolutely critical and essential? And that's part three of attention is focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we have these three parts. And they all accumulate in... did you hear that? Richard's phone going off.
Was that mine?
That was your
that
phone.
That was your phone.
So we have three parts so far. We have the arousal, we have the filter, we have the focus, and then the final piece is important for us to be able to maintain
right.
and sustain our attention long enough to understand what we're attending to receive the information, and most importantly, process the information.
Right.
You know, I was talking to a person the other day about the difference between listening and hearing. You know, hearing is a physiological process.
Right.
You know, it doesn't require much. But to listen to someone, you have to go through these four steps.
Right.
You have to recognize that that's an important piece of information. You have to sustain and focus on it. And then you have to maintain that focus long enough to process it and make sense of it.
Right.
And if we have any difficulties across any of those four areas, we're not going to pay attention. We're not going to bring enough energy and enough focus to a task to receive it, to process it, and to be able to do something with that.
And if you have children, the easiest place to see this is with homework.
Right.
You know, they're too tired to do it, or they can't filter out the TV that's in the background,
right.
or the other noise that's in the background, or they can't focus, or they can focus for a few seconds, but they can't maintain their focus.
Right.
So we see these four phases of attention play out dramatically during homework assignments.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the as we sort of started out with, for different people, difficulties in these areas are for different reasons. You know, for some people, it's because they don't have enough arousal, and like you said, because they're tired. Mm-hmm. For some people, it's because they have too much arousal, and they're just hypervigilant, and they're looking all over the place, and they can't bring it together.
Right.
For some, they have difficulty with the filter. And that's what this particular study said, that, you know, they said that this gene is the filter. It's what makes it difficult for them to screen what was important from unimportant.
And we used to say about children with ADHD is they didn't pay attention to it. And then we realized later is that, no, they're overwhelmed
right.
because there's too much information coming in.
They're attending to too many things.
That's right.
Right.
It's all good. It's confusing and it overwhelms them and they're not able to sort anything out. So,
right.
so that's a filtering problem. Either and usually it's they don't filter enough.
Right. And so... The next step or the next consideration that I want you to make is that, you know, attention happens for many of us. Attention happens even at times when we don't really recognize that it's happening. You know, right. there are many people who, you know, they're just in an environment. They are seemingly off task. They're not paying attention. But then you ask them a question and, man, they get it. And it makes you crazy when it's your kid that does that, right? Because you look
you're
at them.
You're convinced that they're not attending.
And you say, what did I just say? And then they give it to you back to you word for
verbatim,
word.
Right.
Man, it just makes you crazy. But that's a good example of times when the brain is attending, even when it doesn't look like it's attending, even when it doesn't seem like it's attending.
And the opposite of that was when you read and you've read 4 or 5 pages, you know you've read it.
Right.
But you have no idea what you just read.
Exactly.
Okay? So like your attention is somewhere, but it's not on what you're reading with absolutely no comprehension because you're not attending to what you're reading. You're attending to something else.
Right.
Probably an intrusive thought.
Right, right. So attention sometimes happens even when we don't realize it. And and again, another example is that there's times when you're dead asleep.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you wake up because you heard something.
Right.
There was, you know, one of the kids are up or something, you know, the dog knocked something over or something. And so you wake up and you think, I was asleep. Mm-hmm. How did my brain even register that information? How did my brain even register that was going on? And again, that is a good indication that our brain is picking up on the stimuli even when we're not aware of it.
Right.
And this kind of relates to some of the things we want to talk about with ADHD in particular, because we think about kids with ADHD, as you said a moment ago, you know, they're bombarded with information. And we tell kids, or parents will often tell their kids, you know, you just need to focus. You know, don't think about that other stuff. You need to focus. Well, as you very nicely said at the beginning, if they could, they would do that. Mm-hmm. But their brain really doesn't allow them to do that.
That's right, because all the things you're talking about, whether it's being awakened by a strange noise in the middle of the night, or it doesn't look like you're attending, but you are. Filtering, focusing. If you go into the neuroanatomy, there's a specific brain structure that accomplishes each one of these tasks.
Right.
Okay. And so for children who lack these functions, there's the assumption that we make, especially in neuroscience, is it's one of these brain structures that isn't working properly.
Right.
And here comes this gene now that says, well, at least in mice, and probably in humans, this is one of the things that might go wrong.
Right. At least for the second part of attention, filter part.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's another part of the brain in probably our genetics that's associated with the arousal. And you know, if you want an indication of that or an example of that, just look at the differences in newborns. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have some newborns who seem to be constantly aroused. They're hypervigilant. They have difficulty sleeping.
Right.
And then you have the other newborn that's under aroused. They're
hypo,
they sleep all the time, and you know, it's really tough to get them, and they're easily startled and things like that because they're not really scanning their environment. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the infant has learned anything or experienced
it's not
anything.
Learning.
That is brain based. That is from their biology. Mm-hmm. So we know that all of these pieces, whether it's the arousal, the filter, the focus, or the maintenance, the sustainability of attention, all of that is likely brain based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that we should mention that some of that can be learned as well, and we often refer to that as when we talk about this in terms of ADHD, we refer to that as ADHD-like behavior.
Right.
It's probably not ADHD because ADHD is biologically based, but you know, we can have ADHD-like symptoms in certain situations. Mm-hmm. I was teaching my graduate level course last week. Or earlier this week, a couple of days ago, and we were talking about this because I was going through some statistics, and my students don't really like statistics. They're not very into that topic. And so you can tell, and I told them this, you can tell as soon as you start talking about some of these things, eye contact is lost. They start messing with papers. They start looking
at
different things, at their phones, at their computers. Attention is lost immediately because there's under arousal. They're not able to sustain focus and all these things. But it's not a biological thing.
No,
it's just the environmental stimuli just resulted in an inability to sustain.
They have no interest in it, and so they drift.
Right.
Right.
So motivation is a component of attention as well. But again, that kind of motivation is more related to environmental things and choices and interests and things like that, as opposed to some of these biological things that we're talking about.
Right.
So now that we kind of have an idea about what attention actually is, let's talk a little bit about the relationship between attention and a couple of other things. First, let's talk about the relationship between attention and memory. And then we'll talk about the relationship between attention and sleep, okay? Because that was something that came out of the study that I don't know that we think about in mm-hmm. the right way, typically. So first, attention and memory. Well, when we think about memory, everybody's heard of short and long-term memory, mm-hmm. right? Well, in reality, there's four types of memory. There's four stages to memory that we need to mention. The first is called sensory memory. Now, sensory memory is sort of like a flash memory. It's a memory from your senses, and you've experienced this before. So like if something touches you on the arm, even after that stops touching you, you can still feel it for just a few portions of a second after it's removed. And so different senses have different lengths of sensory memory. And I'm sure you know that the longest sensory memory is actually hearing. Mm-hmm. Our hearing sensory memory lasts the longest. And that's why there's times when somebody will say something to you and you'll say, wait, what did you say? And by the time they start repeating it, you understand what they said, because that sensory memory for your hearing holds on to it just long enough to where you're able to catch it even if it's maybe even up to a second or two later. Mm-hmm. So sensory memory is the first piece, and it's critical. It's obviously how information gets into our brain. It's how the information gets into our ability to process it. Now, it doesn't require any processing. It doesn't even assume any processing.
Right.
You can see something and have no idea what you saw, or you can hear something and have no idea what you heard because you didn't process it yet, which gets us to the second type of memory, and that's our short-term memory. Mm-hmm. Our short-term memory is our ability to hold some information in our brain long enough so that we can
decide what to do with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's more or less,
do I want to keep this or not?
Right. Mm-hmm. Is this information important enough to then pass on to the next stage, which is the long-term memory?
Right.
So short-term memory is really important, but short-term memory requires... So we were just talking about sensory memory. Short-term memory requires you to maintain that attention long enough in your sensory memory to get it to be able to make that decision.
Right. The difference between sensory memory and short-term memory is sensory memory requires effort.
Right.
Sensory memory is obligatory in the sense that it's going to happen. If I look at a microphone, that sensory image is going to hit my retina,
right?
And I have no control over that. It's going to be there,
right?
Okay? And then it's going to decay very quickly. Once it does its job, which is to create an electrical current, then it's going to decay. So whether it's hearing or touch or vision, sensory memory decays very quickly, and it requires no effort. It happens automatically. It happens effortlessly. Short-term memory, however, requires effort. It requires conscious effort. How long do I need to keep this in my head?
Right.
And do I want to keep it for a long time, or do I want to keep it temporarily?
Right.
Okay. If I want to keep it temporarily, I keep it, use it, and dump it, because I don't want to clutter things up.
Right.
If I want to keep it for a long time, like I want to remember this person's name, then I have to do something else with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And part of that, a portion of this is involuntary.
Right.
Because in part, this is decided by your thalamus. Your thalamus will determine whether or not something is important enough to go from your sensory memory to your cortex, where it's going to get to your short-term memory. And if it's not important enough, the thalamus kind of dumps it and says, well, we don't need that information anymore.
Right.
And then we really, from a cognitive perspective, we never experience that stimulus.
Right.
We never experience whatever it is that we saw or felt or smelled or heard or tasted.
Right.
It just is dumped. It's gone. Even though we did, physiologically we did, from a cognitive processing, understanding, remembering perspective, it never happened.
It's gone. Right.
So information gets in through our senses. If the thalamus believes it's important enough, it'll then get to our cortex so that we can then hold it in short-term memory, and then we can decide if it's something that we want to attend to long enough to then process and then shift to our third stage, which is the long-term memory. Long-term memory, of course, is storage. It's going to have to do with sleep that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But long-term memory is that consolidated information where we incorporate new information with what we've known from previous, so our previously known information, and we put all this together to create new memories, to create new understandings, to create new ideas.
Right.
And so those are the three primary steps, so sensory, short-term memory, then long-term memory. The fourth type of memory is really important, especially as we're talking about attention, and that is called working memory. Now, working memory requires you to, it's sort of like short-term memory, so you're holding it in your brain, but instead of just trying to make a decision about it, you're doing something with it. You're working it out. So when you're doing a math problem in your head, that's working memory. So if you're trying to figure out, except for something that's just based upon rote memory, because, three times zero is zero, there's really no decision-making there. You just, once you have mastered your multiplication tables, you know that. But if you need to do something a little more complex, like if I give you a string of numbers and ask you to tell me the numbers backward in reverse order, that requires your ability to hold the information in your head, which is short-term memory, but then do something with it.
And which is working memory.
And that's working memory. And that's an area where when we have attention problems, we really tend to fail. Because it's one task to get the information in there to begin with. It's a completely other, different task to hold it in there in such a way that you can manipulate it and do something with it. So working memory is often seen as a deficit in people with attention problems.
Right.
If you have an attention deficit disorder, if you have attentional issues, working memory is usually an area where we see major problems.
Yeah, because you just don't have the attentional capacity to bring it up to short-term memory, bring it back out, retrieve it, then do something with it.
Right.
That takes attention.
Right. Right. So those are our four types of memory, and all four of them require attention.
Right.
We can't remember something. We can't remember something if we don't remember it. Oh, wait, we can't remember something if we don't pay attention to it.
Right.
And we have to have sustained attention to get it from our experience, our physical experience, our sensory experience,
right,
to the long-term memory.
That's right. So at both sides of the memory issue, you need to be paying attention in order to get something into memory. And you need attention to get something out of memory and to work with it.
Right.
So on either side, whether it's, and there's a thing called the information processing model.
Right.
And that's what we always teach in information processing is you have your senses, then you have attention, then you have memory. Okay. And so attention precedes memory, but when you want to retrieve something and put it in working memory, you also have to be attending to that.
Right. And that information processing theory, it is born from computers.
Computers, right. It's how computers work.
When you think about it, if you have a Word document up and you type stuff on there, that's sort of like your short-term memory. It's sort of holding that in there right there. But if you hit the X button, it's gone.
Gone.
Until you save it into long-term memory, which is your hard drive. And
right.
So that's sort of where some of that information processing theory was born. So so you have to have attention. Attention is required for memory. And this is one of the reasons why we have problems with some kids, especially kids with ADHD and even some adults with ADHD who can't remember because they're not attending long enough. We tell them, well, I tell him over and over and over again, he knows the rules.
Right.
He knows the expectations, and sure, you know, you may be able to ask him and he'll be able to tell you, but
Still can't do it. He can tell you about it.
Right.
Which doesn't mean he can do it.
Right, because he hasn't consolidated it to the point where it's a functional appreciation, a functional understanding. Right. And I think about this with kids in school, because the pace at which school moves now, the pace at which teachers have to progress through the curriculum is so quick that if a student has some attentional difficulties, and some of this information doesn't get to their memory storage, they're going to have a lot of problems, because we're going to end up with holes in their foundation. Their foundational skills are going to be weakened because they just lose things. They just miss it.
Right. They're going to be missing things.
And unfortunately, teachers aren't able to take the time needed to remediate and to help with that.
And that's why frequently children who have attentional problems, those attentional problems become most evident in arithmetic and math.
Right.
Because
everything builds on everything.
That's right. Because if you miss something in September, no one's going to reteach that in April.
Right.
I mean, the assumption is that you learned all those skills that you were supposed to learn in September.
Right.
No one's going to reteach them.
Right.
If you don't learn how to add fractions when you're in the fourth or fifth grade, you're not going to reteach that in 10th grade.
Right.
We're going to assume that you know how to do that. Whereas reading is the same from the first day you can read until the day that you stop reading. Reading is the same process. You have a more sophisticated vocabulary and longer sentences, but the reading process remains the same.
Right.
So something you missed in 6th grade, you could learn in 8th grade simply because you continue reading.
Exactly.
So in math. And that's why kids who have attentional problems frequently have trouble in math.
Right. And their trouble in reading is more of a comprehension issue.
That's
not
right.
I can't read it's issue. Not, it's right. a comprehension issue as opposed to a decoding issue.
Right, right.
Now, the second area that we were going to talk about with this is sleep. And as we mentioned a few moments ago, you know, one of the things that this study mentioned and that we also know is that when we sleep, our brain runs through a process of consolidating observations and experiences for the day into memory, into our memory systems.
Right.
And so there is this bridge between attention, memory, with sleep. Sleep plays a role there. Another way in which attention plays when it comes to sleep is actually just getting to sleep. You know, if you're a person that where your brain can't filter, can't do that second stage of the attention process, it can't filter out important and unimportant information, then it's going to be really difficult for you to sleep, because you're not going to be able to turn that off and ignore things or not allow that information to get to your cortex so that you can sleep. Your thalamus just doesn't filter it well enough so that you can get to sleep.
So the first problem is getting to sleep.
Right.
And all of us have had that trouble sometime in our lives, is getting to sleep.
Right.
Okay, so that's issue number one, is how do you get to sleep if you can't filter? If your brain's being bombarded by stimuli, how do you get to sleep?
Right.
Okay.
Right, and the second, of course, is staying asleep. We go through, in our sleep cycle, we go through periods where we're very close to being awake. You know, we get really deep. We go into deep sleep where it's very difficult to arouse us.
Right.
And then we get into REM sleep where we're dreaming and those kinds of things. But at periods throughout the night, and if we get about 8 hours of sleep per night, it happens about 3 or 4 times, where we're almost, I mean, we're just under the veil of sleep. And if we're not careful because of attentional issues, as you get up to that level, anything will wake you up.
People who watch TV in their bedroom, if they fall asleep while the TV's on, they wake up because the TV's
still talking.
When they start to come out of deep sleep, That's when they wake up.
Right.
Okay. Then they have a hard time getting back to sleep because then you've had a little bit of a rest. Mm-hmm. So that's why we encourage people not to have TVs in their bedroom.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And if you're going to have any sound, it should be white, soft, ambient. Right. If white it's music, noise. It needs to be non-lyric music, mm-hmm. Right. Just so that it's not too stimulating to keep you up. And, you know, if you have lyrical music, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, you're going to
start picking up the words.
You're talking and you're going to start processing that. Right. So, mm-hmm. So attention and sleep are much more closely connected than I think right. that we give it credit. Because when we tend to think about issues with sleep, we tend to think of settling and relaxing from a perspective of like hyperactivity right. Or overactivity or impulsivity and those kinds of things. But really, attention is a major factor as well.
That's right. That's right. So if you have a child who is hyperactive and inattentive, right. now you have to remember two things are going on.
Double whammy.
That's right. That's right. The activity level is stimulating them and the attention is overwhelming them. The inability to filter is overwhelming them.
Right, right. So let's talk about what we're going to do about it. You know, that's really some important things because it's one thing to talk about it and it's one thing to say, okay, this is a problem. Now we need to talk about, okay, how can we address this issue? Well,
and you're talking here now about sleep?
Attention.
Or about attention in general?
Okay. Attention in general. So the first thing is, of course, medication. You know, right. there is medication that helps. You know, if you have an attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, mm-hmm. the stimulant medications do pretty well to help you remain focused.
Yes,
because
they do.
What they do is they stimulate the regions of your brain that do the filtering. Mm-hmm. Those regions of your brain are fueled by dopamine and norepinephrine, and so the stimulant medications provide dopamine and norepinephrine, and so you can pay attention. So that's one thing. This study also found that they used the name for it, but it was a very big name with too many consonants for me to know how to pronounce. Experimental medication that they were using with these mice that showed some improvement in their ability to focus and attend. So medication is an option in some circumstances, in some situations. In other situations, I think it's important that we consider how we will address and deal with attentional issues. The first thing is when we think about homework. You know, you mentioned it earlier that's one place where we see that kids have a hard time focusing and bringing the attention that they need. One thing that we often recommend are what we call brain breaks. And you know, we're not talking about breaking the brain. We're talking about taking a brief break from the work. So if he's doing a math worksheet and he's got three more math worksheets, you know, it's a great idea when attention is an issue, and sometimes even when attention isn't an issue, just to have a set period of time where he's to work, after which he can take a brief break, just to get up, move around a little bit, sort of hit the reset button, so then he can get back to it. Not a long break, and certainly not a break where he goes and watches TV or gets involved in video games or anything like that, but just a few minutes. So to get up, walk around, get a drink of water, maybe go to the bathroom or something, and then get back at it. These little brain breaks allow for that reset, and it kind of resets the arousal so that, you know, we can start back at the beginning of our attentional process, and the arousal will be rejuvenated, and then we can focus and attend and do all the other things we got to do.
Yeah, and it really is like a reset button.
Right.
I mean, it's like hitting the reset button, and then you can start again. You know,
right.
Kids need that. These right. kids need that.
Now, a second and related thing is I like the idea of what I'm just going to call spurts. So we say, I just need to just focus and attend for 5 minutes. You know?
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So now sort of instead of just thinking about the brain breaks, you know, have a set period of time and say, just if we can just make it for this long. I also encourage parents to practice this.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a situation and it's not really as dire of a situation, we're not talking about during a test or maybe even not even during homework, but you just sort of create a situation where you need him to concentrate for 5 minutes.
Right.
It's practice. It's like, you know, when we're working with our soccer players, we have them do sprints just to improve their mm-hmm. endurance and their speed and things like that. having these practice attention sessions is going to improve, it's just like the same, it's really the same thing. It helps them improve their attentional capacity, mm-hmm. their sustained abilities. So identify sort of, maybe we, instead of spurts, we'll call them sprints.
Yeah, because we say on the one hand that, you know, you have to be able to focus, but then you have to be able to sustain that attention.
Right.
And you say to kids, well, now you have to do, well, you're asking them to do something they can't do. They can't sustain it for 20 or 30 minutes.
Right.
They can sustain it for 4 or 5.
Right.
And then you work on increasing that time over time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and that's
so don't ask
helpful.
Kids to do something that they're incapable, biologically incapable of doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just setting them up to fail and setting
exactly.
you up for frustration.
Discouragement. And, yeah. That's right. Frustration. Then it feels like disobedience. It feels like defiance. And it's none of those things.
Right.
It's biologically they don't have the capacity to sustain their attention as long as we'd like for them to sustain it.
Right. Right. Now, the third strategy is using cues.
You know, I don't think you have ADHD, by the way.
So the third strategy is cues. cues are really important. In education, we call it proximity. But what we're talking about here is we take opportunities to just remind the child or the student or the even sometimes even the parent that
right.
we need to focus, that we need to pay attention. And mm-hmm. so what we see with teachers is, you know, students who start getting off task, the teacher will just walk around and just put their hand on the student's shoulder. They'll just point to the paper or
walk
provide some subtle cue.
Right. They can just move in the direction of the kid and it sort of reorients the child to,
right.
oh, yeah, I got to pay attention here.
Right.
Right. That's all it takes.
Right, right. And so it doesn't have to be anything major. It doesn't have to be anything punitive. It doesn't have to be anything mm-hmm. like that. It's just a gentle reminder that, hey, remember, we need to be paying attention.
Reset, refocus.
Right. Some researchers have even used little chimes.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. they'll, you know, periodically throughout the day in the classroom, there'll be a little ding. And that's the cue that the students have been taught. That's your cue that you're supposed to think about what you're supposed to be doing, get back to it.
Back in the old days, do you remember beepers?
Yeah.
Did you ever use a beeper?
I had a beeper.
Did
yeah.
you? And what all you do is get a little message, mm-hmm. buzz to, you know, maybe you'd get the number, but
right.
mainly it was just a reminder. A dad, he had a daughter who had ADHD, and he would set the beeper up so that it would go off like every 20 minutes
or oh, yeah.
every 30 minutes, and it would keep her oriented during the school day. And that would be her reminder to make sure you get your homework, make sure
mm-hmm.
you use your agenda. And I thought that was a clever way to do it. Now we have cell phones, so you
right.
can actually give messages. And it's a lot easier now because there's probably dozens of apps
oh, yeah.
that do that sort of thing. But I thought this was really a clever way to keep this girl. It was like a reset. It was like an mm-hmm. automatic reset button.
Right.
Yeah, pretty
right.
cool stuff.
Yeah, those reminders and cues can be a very mm-hmm. effective, sort of non-intrusive way
right.
to help reorient it. I think that was the right word. Get them back to it.
Because if your child really has ADHD, they forget all about parents. They forget all about
mm-hmm.
home. They're very much in the moment.
Right.
And they forget. But if you're constantly, you know, hey, Dad, it's like a tap on the shoulder.
Right.
And oh, shoot, I better make sure I have everything when I get home because my parents are monitoring.
Right,
yeah.
right. So
yep.
now the last one that we're going to talk about is a little bit more hairy. And that is some kids... When we're thinking about this process, remember the first thing was arousal.
Right.
Some kids are under aroused.
Right.
And some kids are over aroused.
Right.
And both will have attentional issues.
Right.
For those who are under aroused, what they really need is some stimulation.
There's more stimulation.
Right. So we run into this almost paradoxical situation where
right.
sometimes. To pay attention to something that you need to do, you need a distraction.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Now, how about that for a paradox? For me, because I don't have ADHD, for me...
You don't.
When I'm doing work, and you've noted this when you've come into my office before, when I'm writing, there are often times when I'll have a podcast or music or something like that going on because that extra stimulation actually... affords me the opportunity to focus because
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, again, when we think about the neurobiology, it's stimulating portions of my brain that helps me to then focus because it filters out what I know is important from not important.
And that's a huge problem for school homework hassles, because there are students who argue that I have to have music in order to do my homework.
Right.
They might be telling you the truth.
Right.
Because there were times when I would write and I would have to play certain kinds of music because it would help me focus. I don't know why, but I don't know whether it was increased arousal or what it was, but I had to listen to music in order to focus on what I was doing.
Velvet Revolver got me through my dissertation.
Really?
Yeah. See, I listened to Velvet Revolver every day.
It's a kind of music that you need. It puts parents in sort of a bit of a pickle because on the one hand, your child is saying, I need a little bit, they can't articulate that.
Right.
They say, I want to listen to music. If they're listening to Guns N' Roses, if they're listening to hip hop, that might be a little more stimulation, more arousal than they need. But
it's their brain. And every kid is different when it comes
to that. They may need hip hop.
Right. Some just need a little bit. Like Velvet Revolver, you mentioned Guns N' Roses. Velvet Revolver is basically the entire Guns N' Roses group except for Axl Rose.
Except for Axl.
But that's what I needed at those time. Right.
It took that to keep you going.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Because we need that stimulation. When there's sort of that neurological under-arousal, your brain is seeking something. It's looking for something. Help me.
And the best advice we can give parents is you kind of have to trust your kids to know what their brain needs. And if the results are good, I mean, if they're more productive with Velvet Revolver than they are without it, then put Velvet Revolver. Let them.
Exactly. And this is a case where sometimes experimentation is necessary. You know, you allow them to do it, how they do. And see how they were when you didn't allow them to do it. And, you know, parents sometimes will say, well, I don't want him to do it because, he gets it done, but it takes him twice as long as it should. Well, if he's not complaining, you know, who cares if it takes him twice as long?
And you have to give your children a chance to succeed.
Right.
And you want them to succeed on their own. I mean, that, after all, that's what metacognition is all about, is we want them to know themselves and what they need to succeed, because there's going to come a time when you're not going to be there.
Right.
They have to know how to succeed on their own.
Right. Yeah,
give them a chance.
I was very fortunate and it was a fortunate situation. I don't know that it was intentional, but it was a fortunate situation because when I was growing up, you know, we were sort of latchkey, so we would come home and both parents would be working. So I would do my homework every day in front of the TV. And so I figured out that was a way that I could get it done. And I always got it done before my parents got home and all that kind of stuff. And so I knew that about myself. And so when I was in college and in graduate school, I was able to maintain those skills. If we don't allow our kids to experience what is helpful for them, if we don't allow them to experience what is beneficial for these difficulties they're having, then they're going to experiment later on with other things.
With other things.
And you know, that's where we, of course, get into issues with substance abuse and dropout and all those kind of things because, I just can't do it.
Right.
And usually there's a way to overcome these issues if you just experience and have the opportunities to understand them.
And give your kids an opportunity to succeed.
Right.
And that's what we keep asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So music isn't going to be beneficial to everybody.
Right.
For some it will be. Some kids with ADHD need absolute silence. Met a girl last week, and if there is a sound going on within her earshot, she is off task. She can't handle it. She needs absolute silence.
I went to high school with a guy, and that's what he said he had to do. He'd put a carpet under the door to block out. But he would even stuff newspapers into the registers so he wouldn't hear the furnace. It was up north, so it was a furnace running.
Right.
And he would have to have absolute silence in order to get anything done.
Yeah, some people need that. So you need to experiment, and you need to see what type of child you have, who you are. You know, you as an adult listening may have some of these difficulties. And
can't do anything if the TV is on.
Yeah, some people, and some people may do well with it, but they keep telling themselves, no, you know, I need to be able to focus, so I got to get rid of all this stuff. But yet they're still having a hard time focusing. And, and maybe try it with a little bit of distraction, a little bit of ambient noise, a little bit of background sound that just, to me, it's sound. I have a harder time with visual things because visual things do draw my attention away. For me, it just needs to be auditory. So that's important.
Yeah, I had a friend who could read and watch TV at the same time.
Yeah, that's tough.
Can't do it.
That's tough for me. So, all right, so there's some strategies. The brain breaks. The sprints, we'll call them sprints mm-hmm. instead of spurts, but sprints, you know, just sustaining attention for a specified, relatively short period of time.
Right.
The cues are really important.
Right.
And then, you know, considering some of these other ways to stimulate the brain or to keep the brain from being overstimulated, some environmental things that may be helpful also.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And see what works for you. Just, you know, try some of these different things and see if it helps.
Mm-hmm.
It will help
right.
most of us.
Right.
Most will be helped by at least one of these things.
Yep.
Cueing is probably the easiest and best
yeah.
for kids
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, again, they want to be good. They want to comply. And so just that little subtle non-punitive reminder mm-hmm. To get back on task usually is adequate.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
All right. Well,
are we going to stop there?
I think so.
We're not going to talk about sleep?
Well,
sleep hygiene. We should talk about sleep hygiene one of these mornings.
Well, sleep hygiene is a bigger topic than we have for 9 minutes.
Yeah, because one of the things. Yeah, let's talk about sleep hygiene.
You want to do sleep next week?
Let's do that next week, maybe for our 50th pod, because we know that children with ADHD don't sleep well.
Right.
They're notoriously bad sleepers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we should talk about what parents can do to assist, because we also know that kids with ADHD have trouble with working memory.
Right.
And working memory and short-term memory are also related to sleep. It's also related to frontal lobe brain function. So, yeah, that's a topic that we probably should talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll spend some time next week talking about
ADHD really works against sleep.
It does. And it prevents you from being able to make some of the changes and complete some of the learning that's really important. So,
mm-hmm.
So absolutely, we can talk about. I think we may have talked a little bit about sleep before, but we'll kind of
especially with this genetic
right.
alteration
yeah.
mutation that occurs in these mice. Now that we know that attention and sleep. Or now we know that how they're related,
yeah,
at least with this genetic mechanism. So
right.
let's do that.
All right. So now a quick announcement or two quick announcements.
Mm-hmm.
First, this coming Monday, it will be Monday the 28th of March here in Polk County. We're having the Battle Over Standardized Testing is going to be an education forum that's hosted by our friends over at The Ledger. It starts at 6:30 and it will be at the Polk State Center for Public Safety at 1251 Jim Keen Boulevard in Winter Haven. There's a lot of good people on the panel, including myself. I'll be on the panel. And we're going to talk about some issues and concerns with standardized testing and what's happening in our school system. So if you're in the area and interested, you know, please come out and listen and participate in that process.
And this is the week for it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Testing season starts Tuesday morning.
Well, yeah, the specific mm-hmm. for FSA Language Arts and Math. It's going to be a great forum. It starts at 6:30, March 28th. You can check it out at theledger.com, and you can find all the additional information there. A second announcement is that over the past few days, I have been recording hours, almost 4.5 to 5 hours
mm-hmm.
worth of information about parenting children with ADHD.
Right.
We're going to be editing it over the next week or so and hopefully have it posted up on Udemy, that's udemy.com, as a course called Parenting Your ADHD Child. And it just provides a lot of strategies and ideas and background information about ADHD, what it is, what it's not, medical, and I spend a lot of time talking about non-medical treatments and ways to address ADHD. Once a parent purchases it, we'll keep it it's going to cost about as much as a typical therapy session, a one-hour therapy
yeah.
session, but yet you're going to get about 4 hours or more of information.
Mm-hmm.
That information is available to you forever.
Right.
And we're going to have
it forever, right?
You keep it forever. You can watch it as many times as you like.
Yep.
We're going to add more information later, additional lessons, and you're going to get some supplemental material including our elimination diet manual. We're including that and a few other things. So it really is going to be a good resource and a good opportunity for parents to get a good basis for managing and parenting their children, especially children with ADHD. So that'll be available soon. You can monitor its progress on Facebook, the Mental Breakdown Facebook page, but also at our through Twitter at Dr. Bernie is the handle for that. And on our blog, thementalbreakdown.com. Mm-hmm. We have lots of information right there. So, right. So lots of that coming up. If you listen to us on iTunes, certainly we encourage you to consider writing us a review or rate us, because that's how other people find out about us and can join in on the conversation. And hopefully, I would like to believe, benefit from some of the things that we talk about, and just right. maybe even just in the very least give you something else to think about.
Right. So love to hear from you.
Yep. So, all right. Is that everything?
That's everything. It's Ooh. Friday. Have a good weekend.
Absolutely.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be here tomorrow. Okay. So, all right. So have a great weekend. And until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great weekend and forget to be afraid.